Hello, community, and welcome to the TDSB Human Library, Conversations Around Black Student Success and Excellence. I am your host, Shale Graham, representing the Center of Excellence for Black Student Achievement Team. We have an insightful conversation in store for you today. Are you ready to talk courageously? Let's get into it. Hello, community. In this episode, we are going to discuss the unpacking of self in anti-oppression work with, you ready for this? Y'all are not ready for this. Author, educational equity consultant, former facilitator with the Education Equity Secretariat's office, former instructor in the Master of Teaching program at OESE, and former director of school services at the Center for Urban Schooling, Dr. Nicole West Burns. Dr. Nicole, it is so nice to have you with us today.
Oh, thank you, Shale. I was so pleased to and honored to be invited to be a part of your human library. So thank you for inviting me.
All right, Dr. Nicole, we are going to go ahead and get this started. Can you tell I'm excited? Yeah, I'm a little bit too excited. Let me take it down a few notches. Can you take a moment to share with us some of your lived experiences, your professional expertise, and just some of your passions that inspire you to do the work that you do?
Oh, wow. Okay. So you said this was only a 15-minute talk. So, you know, it's funny because, and I'm going to actually say something I've said before, when I've been asked this question, and it's been more specifically tied to, you know, when did you become interested in issues of race, and those kinds of work and those conversations. And my response previously, I can't remember how it came to me, but I just said, I was born a Black woman to Black parents in 1967 in Washington, D.C. Like, race has always been a part of my life. And what I'll say to that is that my parents both were Howard University graduates. So I'm an HU, a historically Black college and university. I'm a legacy there. And they always talked about it. My dad actually worked at Howard. My mom went to what was called Freedman's Nursing School at the time, which is tied to Howard University Hospital. But they've always talked about just Black genius and excellence and understanding who we are. And obviously, as the issues of the world were happening in my home, those things were being talked about. But always this idea that, you know, that we are good, that we as a people, that the system, there's something wrong with the system. It doesn't recognize us. It doesn't value us always. Right. And so I kind of grew up in that environment of that, you know, Black pride, Black excellence, Black genius. And so it was always there. And I remember going into schools as a child. And one of the stories I told in some of the other work I'm doing with TDSB this year is about how my mother in grade five, I remember getting the assignment. I had to write about a famous American. And it said, it had at the top, famous American. And I was writing looking at their life and doing a biography. And it had a list of all these different people. And I remember coming home with it, and I didn't know who most of them were. But I remember my mother looking at it. And my mother said, give me your pencil. And she took my pencil and she said, you will write. And of course, there were no Black folks on there, no African Americans. And she said, you will write your report about a famous African American. And so she wrote down W.E.B. Du Bois. I had no idea at the time who he was, but went on to actually use his work throughout my doctoral work, right? And to rely upon him and to understand who he was and to understand so many of the prominent thinkers that, you know, helped advance who we are as a people in America, in that country. And so, you know, I guess from early on, these were issues that were in my life and issues that were highlighted by my parents and issues that were important to me. And so when I went on to do further study and you know, further my master's and my PhD, they were part of that whole idea of success and excellence for Black students. How do we find those spaces? It was always part of my focus. And I ended up doing my doctoral work in Afrocentric education, looking at the idea of communities that start their own schools because the systems have not worked. The mainstream Eurocentric system has not worked for our kids and has not worked to create that space and that opportunity for the genius and excellence we do bring. And so, yeah, that's just a lot of kind of how I've come to be. It is, if you can't hear it in my voice, it is also my passion. I love doing this work. I love helping to, I'm quoting Cornelius Minor here, but, you know, help educators be who our students need us to be. And this work is very much tied to that. So that's a little bit about my my life and thinking and work and passion.
So let me just say this. I so appreciate you giving us more context around who you are, and more specifically, how who you are fuels your work. I have had the privilege of being part of conversations where you also challenge educators to examine the positionality of their identities as it relates to race in education, which brings me to a topic I just want to touch on for a bit. I recently heard you speak about a concept called the archaeology of self. When I hear the term archaeology, it makes me think of digging, excavation, discovery of bones, you know, that kind of thing. But based on the expertise you've already shared with us, I don't actually think we're going to be talking about bones today. So can you tell us what you mean by the term archaeology of self and how this concept is relevant to the impacts of engaging in anti-oppression, anti-racism, and anti-Black racism work?
Okay, well, it's interesting because now that you say that, I'm thinking about bones differently. So we're not thinking about maybe it's not like human bones, but I'm thinking about, so my partner and I bought a house not too long ago this fall, and people, you know, as you're looking at houses and the realtor was talking about the bones of a house. And I guess in a way we are talking about bones, even though it's not the same kind of bones, but it really is bones. I'm thinking of bones now as the basis, right? And so the whole idea of archaeology of the self, it actually comes from Dr. Yolanda Celia Ruiz's work, and she has something called the racial literacy development model. And the archaeology itself is one component of it. And so I'm pulling from her work when I pull that. She defines it as a deep excavation and exploration of beliefs, biases, and ideas that shape how we engage in the work. And so I think about that as one component of what I want educators to think about. I really do believe that in order to do this work, we got to get down to the bones. Like, we got to go to the root, the foundation, bones tied to foundation, maybe. But, you know, we got to look at what's underneath, right? Because I really, really, truly do believe that whatever is underneath, it's going to seep up. And if we're not cognizant of how that has been shaped, and we know that in societies, and because we're specifically talking about, or I was specifically talking about race, and a lot of my work this year is very much so tied to anti-Black racism specifically, as it is certainly needed. These conversations are certainly needing to continue and needed. And one of the things that I know is that a lot of folks in education, and I'm going to say particularly for non-Indigenous, Black, people of color, for many white educators, and we know in Ontario, that is the majority, that one of the things that I know is that these opportunities to kind of look at, you know, how have my understandings and my own belief systems been challenged around issues of race? How have they even developed, first of all, to begin with? Have we even ever thought about that or done some unpacking of that? You know, how do I understand my own positionality? Like, all of those pieces are really important. So when I think of archaeology of self, I am pulling from Dr. Yolanda Celia Ruiz's work, but I'm also thinking of that as one component of the unpacking that we really do need to do of self in order to do this work. A lot of people, again, you know, if we haven't had the opportunities to think about these things, then we're going to replicate what is part of status quo, what we've learned in our teachers' college programs, what we've learned from society, and again, in a dominant society that's based on systems of oppression, we're going to replicate those things, right? Beverly Daniel Tatum says, if you live in a society with smog, you cannot help but breathe it in. They're in the society. And if we're not having those opportunities to educate ourselves, to take action, to build our own critical consciousness, then we're just going to replicate what's already there. And we're going to continue to cause harm as we have.
As I'm reflecting on your insight, I'm considering, you know, how I can dig deeper in search of frameworks and theories that I can pull from and that my colleagues can pull from to become better practitioners for students. And more specifically, because we are on this podcast, Better Practitioners for Black Students. So I'm curious, you know, what are some of the other frameworks and theories that you pull from in supporting educators to unpack themselves?
Yeah, sure. So I like to, I pull from lots of different spaces and places. By training, my PhD was actually in social science, but we know that all of these things are interconnected. So it's history and anthropology and education, and sociology, and all of these things come together. So yeah, I think in terms of doing this work, there are a lot of different places we need to think about pulling from. And so in part, I'll say, I think one place would be making sure that we're understanding, some of the ways that these things play out in the world. So when we're talking about anti-Black racism, when we're talking about anti-racism, or really all the issues of oppression, like how do we understand that as a part of the system? So what are those pieces that are adding to our basic foundational knowledge about how the system of oppression works, right? And I think about resources that will help us to build our understandings of, you know, what are some, you know, how do we define some of these basic things that are impacting the system that, again, whether we are aware that they've existed or not, they are there, you know, so how are we understanding that? And so I think those kind of texts, those kind of resources that can help sort of break some of that down are really important. I know Dr. Celia Ruiz's work, she also has a component called historical literacy. I think it's absolutely important to make sure that we understand the history in the places and spaces where we are doing the work. And again, when we're talking about these systems of oppression, how have these systems of oppression historically shown up and then continue to show up, right? And as I have the conversation a lot around anti-Black racism, you know, one of the things I say is, you know, laws change, but what happens to those ideologies that supported that thinking that was part of society? Right. And so even though we don't have laws in any of these spaces, we have laws actually that are set out and set forth to protect people from harm and discrimination and racism and all those other things. And at the same time, though, those laws, they don't change people's ideologies. Right. And so how do we think about how these things have transpired over time? And like I said, 1834, our enslavement ended, but what allowed our enslavement, what thinking about who we were as a people in Canada allowed our enslavement to exist for so long? That thinking didn't just disappear when the law was no longer in place, right? And so I think, you know, in regard to lots of things, we have to really think about how the history has really impacted, you know, where we are today. I also, I like to pull from, in terms of this work as well, James Banks's work. And he, you know, he's kind of like old school father of multicultural education, but he really had a piece there that I've been pulling from a lot this year called The Knowledge Typologies. And really what he's asking us to do is to think about how our knowledge has been constructed. And that's another thing, you know, a lot of people don't even think knowledge is constructed. A lot of people think, oh, knowledge is just knowledge. And they never sort of question knowledge, but we must question knowledge if we're going to do this work effectively. So we have to think about, you know, what are those things that, you know, he has these five areas, the personal and cultural beliefs that have been passed down to us from well-meaning people in our lives, possibly, right? From people who, you know, they were not trying to necessarily insert any particular, racist ideologies or other, you know, oppressive ideologies. But again, as those things are part of the stereotypes and assumptions and prejudices and what in the world we operate, that those things come out, those things play out, right? And sometimes it's also not just what is said, but what's missing. And so thinking about our personal cultural, what did we learn from those around us who loved us? What did we learn from popular knowledge, right? What did we see on TV? Who was represented? Who wasn't? In what ways? What was popular knowledge reinforcing about normal and good and violent and dangerous? And, you know, school knowledge as well. And a large part of his work, he talks about how popular knowledge feeds into school knowledge. What is that knowledge that's been sanctioned as the knowledge we should have? Mainstream academic knowledge, you know, Dr. Goldie Muhammad, she's another person to pull from in her work, her framework that she has around historically responsive literacy. You know, she asks us very much so the question, you know, why weren't we reading people like Du Bois, right? Why weren't we reading in our mainstream academic educational teacher training programs? Why are those not the people that we're reading, right? Across the board, right? People that were understanding of these issues, that were talking about the excellence of Black folks. Those are the folks we should be reading, but most of us did not get to read that unless we were intentional or in a space where we were lucky enough to have someone who was bringing that knowledge as a professor, but then also intentional, right? Some of that work, I never saw that work until I was in my master's or PhD, because intentionally that was the work I was doing, right? And then the last place is transformative knowledge, where he asks us to think about, you know, what is that knowledge that actually does push back to the status quo, to the oppression, the knowledge that we need actually to change the way we have done things. So I like to have educators think about that. Locate yourself in terms of these knowledges. What were those knowledges you gained? What was missing? And again, you know, many educators have shared with me over the years that they've never really thought about that. They never really thought about, you know, why they learned what they learned, not really questioning what was a part of the pre-service knowledge that they received. And so, you know, we really have to unpack that, because I think that if we don't, what we're going to do is continue to replicate what was always done. And if we're not really going deep, even into our own selves around how we've been shaped and our own biases and beliefs, so going back to that archaeology of self piece, then we're just going to pick up the book and we may cause further harm. We're going to pick up X lesson and we may cause further harm, because we still might be holding on to some of those ideologies, those beliefs that are part of the larger society, those stories, myths, definitions, explanations, representations, rationalizations, what have you, that actually have been a part of these systems of oppression in education.
Community, I hope while listening to this segment, you paused and you took notes, because Dr. Nicole has given us a free lecture today. Unfortunately, this is the point in the episode where we need to wrap up. There definitely needs to be a part two to this conversation, because there's just so much to uncover and unpack. Dr. Nicole, on behalf of the Center of Excellence for Black Student Achievement team, I just want to thank you wholeheartedly for stopping by and for dropping some knowledge on us around the importance of locating ourselves and unpacking ourselves when we're doing this anti-oppression, anti-racism, anti-Black racism work. Okay, community, that's all for today. We look forward to you joining us for our next courageous conversation. If you like this episode, don't forget to share it with a person in your network and post it on social media using the handle TDSB_CEBSA. Bye for now.